This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast.
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Stop by 9390 Rogers Avenue for the best liquor, beer, and wine deals in the River Valley.
Arkansas wins a national championship!
Check out Eastside Liquor on Facebook for weekly specials.
Say goodbye! Darren McFadden, 80 yards, touchdown!
Do you want to watch the Morning Rush, Halftime, Even, Ruskin, and Zach? Find our live video stream on Facebook, YouTube, X, Instagram, and Twitch. ESPN Arkansas, more than just radio.
Birthday wishes for Matt Jones. He thought he would get in and out without anybody knowing, but somebody
Man, texted in.
You had actually mentioned something about it a couple of weeks ago. I had just forgotten.
Yeah. It's Earth Day. It's a good day, man. It was got to play golf yesterday. Got to see some buddies. It was fun. Get to see you today. Get to see you the next 2 days. You know, so hey, we'll have a good time.
That's a birthday present in and of itself.
That's right.
Gonna
that's
hang
right.
out with me for a little bit. And talking to Brian in Ozark, too. That's always going to be a good birthday present.
Thank you for the wishes, Brian.
Absolutely. Yeah. So birthday wishes, whatever else that goes along with that, and calls and texts on the McLarty Daniel hotline.
Was that the kid, the speed demon, the Texas kid that fumbled a couple times in the bowl game? Is that the word? Is that who he's talking about? I wonder. Well, no, not to be funny, but that kid can go. He really can. He's a good player. You have to think he's going to fix those issues as far as fumbling the ball. That's just. So, yeah, I mean, I like him. He reminds me of A-Chain if it's that kid, because you get him in space. That's why I thought, and A-Chain went to the best place possible. That's what Miami wants to do. So you fit around teams like that like to play that no-huddle, hurry up, get to the line and get those guys in space. Tua has the quickest release. I mean, he gets the ball. It's Drew Brees-like as far as how quick he gets the ball out of his hands.
Yes, they're talking about Worthy as being a back-of-the-first-round kind of a guy.
Okay, so, yeah.
It's a pretty good place to be if you're going to be a wide receiver, right?
So he's a receiver and A-Chain's a running back too, so it's a couple different things. So okay, I see.
But still, all right. So let's say, I don't know, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is the first receiver taken off the board, or if it's Malik Nabers, you're going to have to hope that you get drafted by the Chargers instead of the Giants. Right? I mean,
I would want to go to San Diego. I don't want to go to the Chargers over the Giants. Absolutely. John Harbaugh's a winner everywhere he goes. You got a young quarterback. I think Brock Bowers is the guy. I think I wouldn't be surprised. John Harbaugh loves tight ends. Master class using the tight end, even back in his Stanford days. I wouldn't be surprised to see them go there if he's still there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot about Malik Nabers. There's a lot about Marvin Harrison Jr., but yeah, Bowers does feel, if you talk about speed from that position, his speed is a game changer at that position. It was in college. It ought to translate into the NFL too.
He might be the number one guy that's a non-quarterback that you think that's a can't miss, kind of like Jalen Carter was, the D tackle. I do like the offensive tackle from Notre Dame, but yeah, Brock Bowers is kind of like, man, he's going to be a player if he stays healthy in this league, 8, 9, 10 year career for sure.
Well, why wouldn't he be the first non-quarterback that goes off the board? Why is it going to be a receiver?
I think it's a wins above replacement type deal. How they look at
tackle,
how they look at things. What do we need? What is the value? Is there somebody else? Is he that much better? That's my thing, Phil. Is he that much better than everybody else at that position? Then I think if there is that big of a gap, you got to take him.
Thank you, Chris. The San Diego Chargers of Los Angeles. Sounds about right. There was a text in earlier here. TC asked you, what's the week or 2 weeks after being drafted like? You know, I mean, do you immediately, you know, when do you report for the first time? When do you start meetings? Or is there a little bit of a buffer? Because you've been putting all this time in to preparing for the draft and all your meetings and having to be at the combine and the workouts that go along with it. It's not like this just stops all of a sudden, because you got to be in the same shape once minicamps.
I did not get a day off until we got back from Foxborough. We made the playoffs my rookie year and ended up going up to New England and took an L to Tom Brady. I believe it was the year it was Seattle, and was it Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl when Pittsburgh beat Seattle? Was that one of their wins?
That was the 2005 season.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So that would have been the year. You didn't get a day off until exit meetings 2 days after you got back. That was my first day. I mean, once you get drafted, it's you go. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah. Well, you got to sign your contract first, then you go.
Didn't sign a contract till camp. You know,
really?
You kind of go. I mean, you do sign a contract of working out, and there's something, but just as far as your contract, you get it signed. I don't know, the week before camp or something is kind of you'll see it. You'll see it when it happens. But a lot of times they don't sign their contract for a while.
It's kind of all just feels like it happens so fast.
It does. You don't have time to think. It's just next day you're doing something every single day, and it's and your schedule's planned for you. You know, they give you itinerary, like you were going over your itinerary for Tuesday's game. You know, you have an itinerary every day, where to be, what to do.
You know, think about. Well, the NBA draft isn't all that far off. NFL draft, of course, starting on Thursday. These are all drafts that take place during the offseason, right? So, I mean, you don't have guys that are playing or going to play somewhere. You know, even with baseball is the one that stands apart, that has its draft. Well, it used to be right around the time the College World Series would start. And so you would have guys who find that they get drafted while they're in the on-deck circle. Now it's been pushed a month back. And a lot of really what that's there's numerous things that go along with that. One, you get coaches that have issues putting a team together because of the month differential between last year's draft, the old draft, and this one. And then there's guys that are going to play summer ball somewhere, you know, and they're waiting to get drafted. And immediately you get drafted and you go sign your contract and you go to wherever it is that they're going to send you. Right. I mean, it's like you go play almost immediately. In some cases, you go right to the minor league city and you make your pro debut in, you know, it used to be like Johnson City, Tennessee, or Helena, Montana, or, you know, Bristol, Tennessee, someplace like that. Now, I assume they're sending you more to the complexes where the spring training sites are and have a little bit of acclimation to, hey, these are going to be your new teammates and everything, and these are your coaches. But you don't have all that much time, you know. It's like you go start playing games immediately. So
it's kind of like you have rookie camp, and then you'll have veteran camp. Same thing, what you're talking about. They get you in there, and maybe the third string. I tell you, the first string quarterback takes every rep that they want to take at practice. So you know who takes the rookie camp. If you didn't draft a quarterback, one of the third string or second string gets to go up there and takes the reps, because you don't get to take a lot of reps if you're not the first string quarterback. You definitely need to stay in college and get some reps there.
Take a phone call from JR in Shady Grove. He's on the McClarty Daniel hotline right now. Hey, JR, thanks for calling. What's going on?
Hey, Phil. Matt, happy birthday to you.
Hey, thanks.
Hey, Phil, the other night, Friday night, during the baseball game, I noticed South Carolina was getting really upset with some of the calls. Most of the time this year, I mean, it seems like if that strike zone is, you know, wide or short or whatever you want, narrow, whatever you want to call it, it seems like it's been consistently called by both teams. Did you understand why South Carolina was getting so upset with how that was being called?
Well, I don't have like the actual percentages for one team or the other, but I thought it was a strike zone that was consistently called poorly both ways. You know, I saw pitches that Hagen Smith threw that should have been easy strikes in the top of the zone, and I had TrackMan up for the road game for the first time. And it didn't get called a strike, but he got some pitches that were 2 or 3 inches off the plate that were a strike. So I saw it both ways. And I think the Carolina's frustration, had to do with, yes, the strike zone was part of it, but it also was just trying to hit against the Arkansas pitching staff, and at the same time feeling that you're not just trying to hit against those pitchers, but you're also trying to hit against the umpire. And they were trailing at that moment. If they were leading at that moment, the frustration doesn't bubble over the way that it did. So I thought Friday's strike zone was abominable, but I don't think that it really favored one team or the other, because does Hagan Smith need help from umpires to dominate somebody? No. Was the umpire the reason that he dominated Friday? Not at all. No, because he had pitches that should have been strikes that were not called strikes. So I just think it's frustration. You get frustrated when you hit against this team. You get frustrated when you hit against Hagan Smith or against Gabe Gackle or against Stone Hewlett. And I think that's what it had to do with more than anything else. Yeah. And the other thing is that there were two arguments that Kingston came out for. He had an argument, I think it was the sixth, the seventh inning, and I think he should have been run then. He should probably been thrown out earlier in that game, but he didn't. And so the second time he comes out, that was it. The moment he stepped out of the dugout, he had one thought in mind, and it was to get the thumb. And then for the rest of that game, what that also did is, it's not really a cool thing, because it gives those players in that dugout, they feel that they have license to argue with the umpire too. And then the associate coach that takes over as the head coach, he should have been thrown out. He stepped out of the dugout to shout at the umpire about this call or that call just moments after his manager or his head coach got thrown out. So I just think it made their frustration bubble over, and they were lucky they didn't have two or three more ejections, to be quite honest.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
Hickey & Hull Law Partners are now here for you and all your legal needs in Mena and the Little Rock area. Hickey & Hull Law Partners, specializing in divorce, custody case, civil litigations, and more. Having over 7 decades of combined experience to better serve you and the community you live in. Please visit kevinhickeylaw.com or call us at 479-434-2414 for a consultation or come by an office nearest you. Things are about to get better.
Former Arkansas basketball player Sailor Poffenbarger, she's going to transfer to Maryland, which makes sense. She's from Middletown, Maryland, and will be returning home for, I guess it'll be your last 2 years of college basketball. Mike Irwin's with us. He's on the McLarty Daniel Hotline, of course, from Pig Trail Nation. Always appreciate his time. Mike, just saw where Sailor's going to head, and I guess everybody's kind of waiting on pins and needles to find out who's going to be the second commit for John Calipari.
Carter Knox is supposed to be in Fayetteville on a visit, but I haven't heard anything so far this morning. He's a former five-star signee who got out of his LOI, and some say there are as many as 4 other Kentucky players or signees that are rumored to be coming to Fayetteville. If that's true, you're still going to need 7 other guys to fill up the roster. I mean, guys, I'm just telling you, and I know fans are excited because the word is they've got NIL money now, and they're in a position to get some good players. But I want you to stop and consider that supposedly by the time this basketball portal period ends, there's going to be 2,000 players in the portal. That's about 40% of all scholarship guys. And if this doesn't get addressed at some point, you're going to see this turnover every single year. I mean, you got Duke, who went to the Final Four and has now had 7 players hit the portal. And it's obviously what's going on here.
Yeah.
Players are just going, hey, I can get money, I'm going. And now word is that I saw where the Division I committee of the NCAA, this unlimited transfer thing was supposed to go away. Now they've recommended that as long as you're eligible, you can transfer as many times as you want. They're all scared of court action. But everything's about the athletes and what the athletes make and what the athletes want to be able to do, and they're not taking into consideration what fans want. And fans do not want a brand new team bought and paid for every year, come in and play a year and then leave, and more guys come in. You just can't keep up with it. It would be worse than minor league baseball trying to watch what's going on with the Naturals, which I always had trouble trying to keep up with because there's so much movement there.
Well, that movement would occur during the season. I mean, I used to put the roster together for the Travelers and had to stay on top of all of the players. Heck, we had a year where there was over one roster move per game. This offseason stuff is kind of wild. The number you just said, I just did a little math. If there are 2,000 or 3,000 in the portal?
2,000. They're estimating to 2,000 by the time it's over.
If you go by 13 scholarships per team, you could make 154 basketball teams just off the players that are in the portal. My gosh.
Again, it's estimated that's 40% of all guys on scholarship. And it's just, I know Razorback fans are excited. Who's Cal going to bring in? He's got some money to spend and all that stuff. But do you really want to do this every year? Do you just want a team put together based on how much you can outbid everybody? It's just crazy. And I'm not against athletes getting paid some, but this thing is, it's all a result of the NCAA they went after three football schools for violations on buying players with NIL money, and they served notice, we're going to hit you with sanctions. And they got a lawyer and filed a lawsuit and then got a restraining order against the NCAA to prevent it from upholding it from enforcing its own rule on NIL. And that's just opened the floodgates. And until that gets decided or they come up with another answer, this is what we're stuck with. And I'm telling you, it's not even this crazy. In the NFL, it's much more stable. You've got a draft. You draft players, they don't leave unless you want them to leave. You know, you've got a salary cap. This is just wild, wild west, whatever you want to do.
It is. It does seem like rent a player. You know, both sides can get out of it at any time. And when I heard that seven players were leaving Duke, that just didn't make any sense. Like, something does have to be fixed. I don't know what the solution is. If you go somewhere, if you have to sign a 3-year deal, 4-year deal, or go back to where I'm all in favor, Mike, of a one-time free transfer. One time. That's what you get.
And that's what we were supposedly going back to in July. But now, and I don't know why the Division I committee recommended this for approval. It's still got to be approved by the entire NCAA. The only thing I think of is they're afraid if they don't do something, they're going to get sued again, because that's what's happening.
Well,
people that are representing the athletes are filing lawsuits saying, we got to have our rights. We got to have rights to do this and this and that and this. And nobody's asking the fans about their rights.
I feel like it's a next step that the NCAA can take to whomever they're speaking to on Capitol Hill and say, look, we had to do this. Otherwise, we were going to have to go to court again and we were going to lose. So it's like it's another plea without pleading to senators or whomever, that you're trying to work in some sort of framework for antitrust legislation for the NCAA, which... nobody's interested right now, I think, in that actually passing on Capitol Hill. So this right now to me seems like it's the system that you have at least for a year or two more.
The possible solution, the best one I've seen, was proposed by the NCAA president about 6 months ago. And that's the super division of about 70 to 80 teams. And what each team in this super division would have to agree to do is provide about $15 million in NIL money for a collective, where all 440 or 50 athletes that you have would get the same amount of money. Now, you could still come in after you're recruited and get you an agent if you're a quarterback or somebody that's high profile and work out your own deal. But this would give everybody some money, and it would settle this thing down. And I think there's some rules they could come up with on transfer that the athletes would have to agree to it. But I think if you're getting, everybody's getting money, some money, they're going to be happier and they're going to be more likely to go, okay, we're satisfied with this transfer arrangement, whatever it works out to be. So that's, And guys, the one that was leaked out, and it was just a group. It wasn't the NCAA. It was a group of people involved in college athletics behind the scene that was coming up with a proposal. But I don't know if you guys saw the screenshot on these proposed conferences. I loved it because it took regional needs into consideration. So, for instance, teams were grouped where they could play close to each other, and the one they had Arkansas in was, in effect, the old Southwest Conference, but adding Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and taking out Rice. And you think about the travel arrangements would be better for the athletes. You're not sending somebody halfway across the country on a volleyball team to play and then come back and have to be at class the next day. So the travel is better for the athletes, but it's also better for the fans.
I read about that group, Mike. I read about it, and I mean, I think it's a really interesting idea, but those folks are trying to get certain people at the table to talk to them, and it doesn't sound like Greg Sankey is one of them right now. And if you're going if you're going to get something like this passed, then there, it does not happen without both the SEC and the Big Ten being fully on board, because right now are the pilots that drive college sports.
That's right. The opposition to it is that everybody's saying the SEC and the Big Ten have all the power. Why should they allow all these other schools to benefit too? And so will they be selfish and not do what's best for all of college athletics? I don't know. But even so, you still have to do something, in my opinion, to solve this problem of people just jumping up and traveling halfway across the country. This doesn't make any sense. And what they're doing when they eliminate fans being able to go to games, you're just driving them to television. So you're driving away your live gate, which makes no sense to me. I would think Arkansas, now, with OU coming into the SEC, I still think Oklahoma State belongs in some way or somehow. That would be a great travel arrangement back and forth between Arkansas and those two teams. Much better than, people would much rather go over there than go up to Missouri, every other year. So any way to make this happen, I'm in favor of. But something's got to be done to tie all this in to solving the NIL and unlimited transfer problem.
Hey, Mike, the NBA playoffs got underway, and all eight teams, home teams, won their first game. It hasn't happened since 2013. I saw Dame Lillard. He went out there, no Giannis against the Pacers, went out there and scored 35 points in the first half and zero in the second half and played. I wonder what the record is for that right there. But I still got the Celtics and the Nuggets in the finals. Mike, will you be watching any of the NBA playoffs? Who do you got?
Not really. I mean, I got so much. I am so snowed under with baseball right now. Guys, I'm a baseball nut right now, college baseball. I'm watching every game on ESPN3 that I can watch. And this baseball season is, golly, has it gotten tight. Tennessee's now moved up. I think Tennessee and Kentucky swapped, but you got 1, 2, 3, and 4. And it's coming down, guys. Arkansas might get a break this weekend with Florida because their pitching's not good. But after that, you're talking about facing three teams in Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Texas A&M, three of the five top ERAs in the league, plus those teams can all hit. Ooh, man, this is going to be tough.
Well, they had a 4-1 week, Arkansas baseball did. Five tight games. You know, and look, this midweek series against Texas Tech is not your average midweek series. I think that's a good Red Raiders team, especially when they play at home. I was impressed with how Arkansas played against the Red Raiders. But a 4-1 week with two of those victories coming on the road against a good Carolina team. But you're right. I mean, the schedule definitely has an uptick coming up. And Florida might be struggling now, but they're the only team that's beaten Texas A&M 2 out of 3 this year. So
There's an unpredictability to all this. But here's the thing, guys. The 9 runs that they scored in Game 3 against South Carolina, okay, that's good. But they went through a stretch before that game where they were 1-3, and they had averaged 2 runs a game in that stretch, and it was starting to look really dicey. And then they come back, so now things look a little better. I don't know if they figured something out. I don't know if they just got lucky. I've never figured out hitting. It just comes and goes. I'm sure there's a science behind it, and I'm sure DVH and Nate Thompson are working behind the scenes to solve some of these problems. But the fact of the matter is it's run scored that's a problem, because last time I checked, they were 12th out of 14 teams in run scored, and I don't think that's sustainable even with really good pitching. And the they've got some bullpen problems that have popped up in the last few games. McIntyre in particular has had some issues. Now, I think they have backed him up real well. But I'd like to see him pitching better. You know, it's just, you know, you can always get nervous about this stuff. I keep thinking about the year that Ole Miss won it all, and they finished fifth in the league, and everybody was complaining they didn't think they should even get in, or finish fifth in the West, tied for eighth overall. Then they get in and win the College World Series. So it really is about how you're playing once postseason begins.
You never quite know. With it, so much of it is also the draw that you get, you know, what your regional looks like. You know, Hogs ran into a buzzsaw with TCU last year. And, you know, the year before, they were the buzzsaw, but they weren't playing well going into the postseason. So it's like you try to make sense of this sport,
exactly.
You're going to be shown reason why you really can't.
I mean,
Gackle has turned into their most important reliever.
Yeah,
as good as McIntyre's been, Gackle is incredible. 0 for 17 with runners on base and two outs. If there's one thing I want from a pitcher in relief to be able to do, it's pitch with men on base. And he's so good as a freshman, inheriting runners. And I don't think his pulse ever elevates. He is just as calm as ever.
Yeah, and you keep thinking Gage Wood. I mean, at times this guy's amazing, but he's just there's a little bit of last year still in him. Got a little dicey there at the end of, I think it was game three, but, you know, he came through. But, again, I just think Arkansas has put so much pressure on these pitchers all year long, and you just at some point – I was sitting there thinking to myself, when they got that 7-2 lead, I'm thinking seven-run lead. It was 9-2? 7-run lead, and I'm thinking, finally, you can relax. No, you can't relax. This team doesn't play that way, you know? You're going to be sitting there sweating it out till the very end. That's just the way they are.
Hey, Matt, this has to be the last thing. I will bet you that our guest here, Mike Irwin, would be the same as you, that he does the stealth birthday. Doesn't warn anybody leading up to it. Mike, if you're not aware, today is Matt Jones' birthday. I didn't even know until someone texted in telling us 25 minutes into the show, because Matt is a stealth birthday celebration. Are you the same way?
Well, especially at my age. I don't want people to know how old I am. They might kick me out of TV and then I have to go retire. You know, so no, I don't do the birthday thing. My immediate family, my wife, my kids, my grandkids, they do. I don't talk about it other than that.
Sounds about right. That's about what I thought. Mike, appreciate you hopping on with us as always. Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift. Selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
The Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa in downtown Hot Springs, Arkansas is the perfect destination for your next getaway. Join them for a romantic Valentine's Day getaway with a special dinner or romance package. Or if you're coming to town for live racing, they've got room for you every weekend, including Martin Luther King Day weekend and President's Day weekend. Experience all the luxury and hospitality of a Grand Southern Hotel. The accommodations are sure to please everyone. Visit arlingtonhotel.com for more details. That's arlingtonhotel.com.
Coming to you live from the Crabtree RV Center Studios. Broadcasting on ESPN Arkansas and streaming on HitThatLine.com.
We got a good one tonight. You got a team in here that doesn't respect you.
Live from the Busch Light Studios.
Don't ask me if I'm all right. What can you say dominate? And we not doing it.
We're going to go get one and celebrate on somebody else's field.
Yeah. Matt Jones may take it to the house. Marco said you had very motivational words at halftime.
It's Halftime with Bill Olsen and Matt Jones.
From the bottom of my toes to the top of my head. I'm putting my heart up. Let's go, man.
I have zero respect for saying no moss at halftime.
What's able one Razorback?
Is vintage Matt Jones.
Here we go. Right now, let's take the field.
Text on the McClarty Daniel Hotline, 877-377-6963. Now, here's Phil Olsen and Matt Jones.
Back on Halftime on ESPN Arkansas and hitthatline.com. Phil Olsen with Matt Jones here in the home studio. C-Unit Christian Johnston producing at our ESPN Arkansas headquarters. And everybody that is sending in the lines from the movies Airplane and The Naked Gun, if you want me to be able to make it through the remainder of the show, we've got like 60 minutes left, I can't look at these lines because it's just bringing it all back. So I'm not even going to, I can't even read one of them. B.E., you got to stop. I can't take it any longer. Because those are the two movies that's like, that and Fletch. It's like no, every single, if you are a male who's 47 years old, you know all the lines from those movies. Pretty sure of it. All right. Aaron Boone, so the Yankees are playing the Athletics today at Yankee Stadium, a day game in the Bronx. Aaron Boone was ejected after one batter. In the dugout for all of one batter. The ESPN story says he was ejected five pitches into the game when the A's leadoff batter, Esturi Ruiz, is hit by a pitch on 0-2, and the pitch clearly plunked Ruiz. The Yankees dugout thought he had swung at it. So Boone, as the story says, communicated his disapproval. That's a nice way of saying, might have shouted out a few obscenities to the plate umpire. And Hunter Wendelstedt communicated his thoughts, saying, you're not yelling at me. Did everything he's supposed to do. And then one pitch later, he's thrown out of the game. Now, Boone had said, it's not me. Apparently, Boone said it was a fan that shouted out at him after the argument and then the next pitch, and Wendelstedt heard what the fan shouted at him. It wasn't Boone, but he threw Boone out of the game, thinking it was him. Rabbit ears.
If you're going to get thrown out of a game on a first pitch, rather it be at home. You know, now you're on the way, on the raid locker room. What's going on at home? You know, quick shower. You can beat the traffic. Get out of there.
A lot of traffic at Yankee Stadium, yeah. Man. And I don't know if Boone is the guy that's going to take the one train back home. I doubt it. Well, we had an ejection on Friday at Founders Park, and it sounded like this. 1-1 on Holt. Might have hit him. Payton says it hit my jersey. He makes a motion to Mark Winters, hit my jersey, and now he agrees, and here comes Mark Kingston out of the dugout. Kingston's jogging towards Winters, and he's coming out with purpose. He is getting in Winters' face. He's asking, why don't you ask for any help? You could see from here, Mark Winters has just ejected Mark Kingston from the game. And Kingston came out with one thing in mind, and that was to get thrown out. He doesn't have a leg to stand on here. You could hear it. You could hear the pitch hitting Holt's jersey. I don't know what he thinks happened. I don't think he cared what happened either, because he just had designs on getting thrown out of a game. Otherwise, you don't run out of a dugout if you don't think you're going to get thrown out of the game. For your second argument, too, it was the first ejection I've seen this year, and you just don't see ejections very much in college baseball anymore, because everything is reviewable except for the strike zone. So all the arguments that used to be about, you know, safer out at first base or a tag play, I mean, there's still some, and I think some of it's based upon obstruction rules that are being enforced differently now. But really, at that point, the argument that the manager would have would be with the people that are back at the replay center in New York. What are you going to do? Fly back to New York and argue with them in order to get thrown out of the game? It doesn't work that way. So I got to, hey, after all, I've worked 20 years in the minor leagues, no replays there. You had some really fun ejections in the minor leagues. And it used to be you had some fun ones in college, but not so much anymore. It's one of the only sports, too, where this just kind of happens and you expect it. Like, you get your double technical in basketball, you get thrown out. I don't remember hearing about a coach get kicked out of a football game.
Well, the thing is, from baseball to basketball to football, this is why it doesn't happen in football and basketball. It hurts your team. In baseball, it doesn't hurt your team. You get thrown out. You don't lose a guy in the outfield. Every hitter doesn't start the next count with two strikes. Football, it's a 15-yard penalty. And in basketball, it's points. So that's why I don't think you see it in the others. It's kind of just part of the – you have to get thrown out of a game each year, right? Like at least one. What's Dave Van Horn got, two since you've been doing it?
So 10 years, I maybe have seen him get ejected three times.
Yeah, he seems like he keeps his cool.
One of them was also like he got thrown out from the dugout and he didn't say anything. You're like, all right, rabbit ears. It's obviously just rabbit ears. Usually you get thrown out of the game when you come out of the dugout. I had a guy named Trent Durrington who played in the big leagues for a little bit, and he was with us with the Travelers in Shreveport, Louisiana. So it was certainly not that he wanted to get back to the hotel quicker, because when you get thrown out of the minor leagues, you're done for the day, and that was not a very nice clubhouse. He got thrown out of a game that he wasn't even playing in. He's screaming about the strike zone from the dugout. And he wasn't not even in the starting lineup. So I guess at that point, it's like, oh, I'm not playing. Screw it. I don't feel like being here right now. I'm going to go start drinking in the clubhouse. I don't think that's what he did, but I think he had some other things that were going on that made him a little bit angry. Yeah. I love the ejection. I love telling this story of Tom Runnels in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Runnels had managed, I think he'd managed the Expos. He was a big league manager for a short period of time. He's managing Double A. Colorado's Double A team in Tulsa, and he hated the strike zone that day. He comes out to argue the strike zone. He points into his dugout, motions for somebody to come out. The bat boy runs out. He stops the bat boy with his hand, says, "No, not you, you." And he points to the team trainer. The trainer comes. You can imagine the look on this guy's face as he's being asked to come out by his manager. And no player is injured. And Runnels told the trainer to administer an eye test to the plate umpire on the field. And then he told him to turn him over, bend him over, and check if he's not full of crap, too. And he got thrown out for that. It was the most entertaining ejection that I've ever seen in my life. And it took me a while to realize what he was doing. Why else would you bring a trainer out while you're arguing with the plate umpire? It could only be for an eye test, or maybe to ask, you know, do you have some chewing gum to give this guy because his breath stinks. This is my favorite ejection of all time. But look, man, you're right too. Baseball managers, head coaches, sometimes they'll do this on purpose to fire the team up. I think in Kingston's in Kingston's mind, maybe to fire the crowd up too, but also to make a point. You know, I mean, Musk got thrown out of a game, and I assume at some point you realize I might get thrown out of a game. What does a football coach have to do to get thrown out of a game? Like, you bait balls and strikes with an umpire, you're in the danger zone. You start stomping your feet, coming out of the coach's box, coming on the court in basketball, you're in the danger zone. Football head coach, if you come onto the field, all they're going to do is give you a 15-yard penalty. I've never heard of a football coach getting thrown out of a game.
Woody Hayes for punching a player, you remember that
one? But I don't know if he was thrown out or if he was just fired, you know, the next day for it.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, I can't either. That's to your point. I'm sure it's happened, but I can't remember one either.
Jeremy in Tulsa is here on the McClarty Daniel Hotline. Hi, Jeremy. What's going on?
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. How are you guys this Monday?
Great. Thank you.
Good. A couple things, and then Phil, I want to ask you a question. So maybe I'll say something, ask a question, then another statement, but it shouldn't take very long. Phil, one of my favorite things to do on a Friday evening when I get off work at 5 o'clock is, say the game starts at 6, turn your pregame on to at 5:30, get ready for the game, get my weekend going. I mean, I pop on pretty early, so I'm used to the countdown, T-minus 2 minutes till airtime, so I've got that memorized pretty well.
So you hear when
I
they
really
give that 15-second countdown, and then it goes quiet. Did I lose my connection?
Yep. 30-second countdown, 15-second countdown. But question for you, Phil, and then I'd like to make a statement. Which do you prefer? So you call the doubleheader Saturday. Do you like, say, maybe calling two games, albeit a busy day on Saturdays, and getting Sunday off? Or do you prefer just the Friday, Saturday, Sunday slate?
I would not have been able to spend the day with my kids yesterday if we didn't have a doubleheader. So, because we would have gotten back too late and on Sunday, and so for that reason, I was pretty thankful that they had a doubleheader. And look, I've done so many doubleheaders in the minor leagues alone, but those are 7-inning games. Like so it's 14 innings. Adding another 5 innings onto it, or adding another 4 innings onto it, you can feel it. You can feel it, but it's fine. If I sound ever like I don't have a lot of energy, trust me, I've got energy for a doubleheader broadcast. I can pull that off. But for the team, you know, I mean, I'm sure they were really happy getting yesterday to not have to play and get like a legitimate day off. No practice, no classwork, nothing to worry about, just a day to lounge around, rest. And after playing 5 games in 5 days last week, I think it's a good thing for the team.
No, I agree. And, you know, you spoke on your perspective and the team perspective. And to be selfish from a fan perspective, the doubleheader was nice because when we lost game one, I didn't have to go to bed and wait for the next day to see who's going to win the rubber match. We got to kick it off an hour later. So that was good. Also, I want to speak to the bats. You know, a lot of people are, you know, freaking out about the bats. I think our bats are going to be just fine. I mean, we're still in April. Would we rather peak week 6-7 of the conference series and maybe plateau out towards the playoffs? Or, you know, kind of like 2022, if my memory serves me correctly, I think we lost our last 2 series. I know we lost the last series to Alabama. We went to Hoover, lost the first 2 games in Hoover to Alabama and to Florida, and then got some time off, got a little bit of a break, and then our bats picked up right in the regional. I was at the OSU game. I think we hit 7 home runs, and they – you know, did good for the rest of the season. So, you know, I was listening to Robert Moore talk a little bit this past week, and you know, he had mentioned one of the biggest key things in baseball is being healthy at the right time and getting hot at the right time. So I think we're healthy for the most part, being, you know, 10 weeks into the season or however long we've been playing. But I think we'll pick it up. I think we have the talent. We definitely have the pitching to make a deep run. So I just think everybody needs to take a step back, and myself included, take the hog goggles off. We're 34-6 overall and 14-4 in conference, ranked number 2 in the country. You know, what else do you want? You don't want to be number 1. You know, that little plague that's gone on with the number 1 team. So I think we're sitting good. Phil, Matt, I'll turn it back over to you guys. Thank you for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Jeremy, I appreciate the phone call and your perspective, too. And look, I mean, I understand people being nervous and worried about the offense, because it is difficult to win games if you scored 2 or 3 runs. This is a team that can win those kind of games, but they can also win 6-2. And if they scored 6 runs, you'd feel really good about things. But I also think that at this point, they've played 40 games. I don't think we keep hearing they're going to come around. They're going to come around. I think coming around is probably something like scoring 5-7 runs. But with this pitching staff, that'll work. That can work. And look, they're not going to go. I doubt they go undefeated in the postseason once they get there. They're going to lose a game or 2 somewhere along the line in June. Yes, probably. That's the sport. National champions lose in the postseason sometimes. Will it be because of the lineup? There's potential of that. There's no doubt there's potential of that. The crazy thing is that you're getting no production from your outfield for a good chunk of the season, and yet you're still 34-6. You know, I mean, what this is telling me is it's a team that's used to playing in tight ball games. However a fan might feel during a game based upon what the score is, I don't think that affects the guys in the dugout very much. They're just kind of consistent in their approach and in their emotion, or maybe lack thereof at times. Like, I feel that emotion up in the booth when you're down 2-0 in the 6th inning and you haven't really scored at all and you've left a bunch of guys on base. I'm like, I don't know if they're going to pull it off today. But you know what? In the 7th, 8th, or 9th innings, they have been able to pull it off. So I just try to look at the record. I know a lot of folks are looking at what will be their undoing, or what they think will be their undoing somewhere down the line. Last year it was injuries. It was the pitching, yes, but it was injuries that did them in last year. Nothing has to do this team in, truthfully, because when you have that kind of pitching, when you have this kind of defense, you've got the things that a lot of other teams really would drool over, even those teams that score 7-8 runs a game. I'm not trying to tell you this is a perfect baseball team. They're not. But I think they're better than last year. I think that they are a more complete team than 2021, the team that won every single series going into the postseason. This is a more complete team than that, and it's because of the pitching. So, yeah, we all deserve to have our concerns. I'm not just trying to assuage them because maybe that is the thing that does them in. But it's a really good baseball team. I'm enjoying watching them, and like Eddie said, I'm enjoying the ride. It's been a fun season, and even the rest of the regular season, I think, is going to be really a lot of fun and a high level baseball. Like, look this weekend, and I know you got the game at Dickie Stevens tomorrow, and we'll break in a moment here, Christian. This weekend, you're going to have two players on Friday that are going to be picked in the top 10 of the draft. I mean, picks 1 through 10. When Hagen Smith pitches to Jack Caglione, there's not going to be a more exciting batter-pitcher matchup in the entire nation for the entire season. I mean, every single baseball game played across the country in college, there won't be more people talking about Hagen Smith against Jack Caglione, because those guys are going to face each other here. They're going to face each other in the major leagues. They're both top 10 picks this season. That's the kind of stuff I get fired up about. Oh, no, yeah. I expect the Hogs to win the series, too.
BetOnline is the number one source for all your sports betting this season and every season. You'll find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends all at BetOnline. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. The fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Go to BetOnline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure you use the promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. Bet online, where the game starts.
Try the new Traveler Whiskey, a Chris Stapleton and Harlan Wheatley collaboration. A great buy. Also, Hard Truth, Sweet Mash, Bourbon, and Rye are available. Only at Eastside Liquor. 9390 Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith.
I see your boy Scotty Scheffler continued to just kind of dominate. You win the Masters, now you win the RBC Heritage. That's, you know, it's like... You win a golf tournament, that's one thing. You win the Masters, that's another. You win the one after you won the Masters, you're on some kind of a heater.
Oh, yeah. I think 60-something holes without a bogey. That's just unreal what he's doing. 72 holes a tournament, so that means his last couple days he didn't even get close to a bogey.
Has his wife given birth yet? Is the kid born yet?
Man.
I don't know if that happened or not, because I remember it was supposed to happen... Maybe he would have left the Masters in the fourth round.
I think the 28th was the due date.
Okay.
Something. It was the very end of the month was the due date, if I remember right.
See what else looks like. There is a projected number one pick who is who has submitted paperwork to the NBA to be eligible for the draft. Last year, the number one pick was Victor Wembanyama from France. And is this kid from France too? Zachary Risacher. I don't know how to say his name. Risacher. Risacher. It can't be. That's how you actually say it. Risacher. I don't know.
I'll have to look that up. The stat that threw me off, Phil, was I saw where. Well, I'm not surprised that she's the number one jersey in the WNBA as far as Caitlin Clark. But the stat that threw me off was. She sold more than the number one selling NFL football entire team, Dallas Cowboys, did last year already with Indiana Fever.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's
and your point that you said, I don't know if we were on air or if it was one of our conversations during the break, but the Indiana Fever's logo, they hit the jackpot
well,
right
Salesforce
there.
Is the company that's got the sponsorship on the Fever jerseys. I don't know how long ago they sold that sponsorship, but it's a... I think it's worth quite a bit more than it was when they first signed that deal.
OMG.
I mean, her photo was everywhere with that jersey on. That's right. But the idea that, I mean, the Cowboys are they still the most, they're still the most.
They had the number one and number five selling jersey last year in Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott. So they had two of the top five, and she sold more than the entire Dallas Cowboys team.
This has to translate to TV ratings at some point, doesn't it? Is every one of her games going to be televised nationally?
I, yes and no. It's they have to have some success. I think you show up and you watch your play if they're winning. If they're 5-17, you kind of lose a little bit because you want to see greatness, yes, but you want to see success with it, being a team sport. But individually, she's the hottest name. I'm trying to think in basketball for female. Deanna Taurasi, Christina, who was the last girl that won four straight MOYPs? Brianna Stewart.
Yeah.
But see, there wasn't that talk. So the biggest thing since Phil and I, since me and you've had this radio show, right, the biggest WNBA talk is Brittany Griner getting in trouble in Russia. That's the biggest thing since Caitlin Clark.
It's not even basketball talk.
That's what I mean. She's elevated the WNBA, and I don't know how it's going to translate and come to fruition, but it's a good problem to have.
I mean, she does. It feels like she's the Babe Ruth of the WNBA. Taking a sport that was in existence for years before she showed up, but now in the near future, you know, If the jersey sales a lot of times do correlate to television ratings.
Yeah.
I mean why are the Cowboys always on their five, you know, nationally televised games, Monday night, Sunday night, Thursdays, all of that, and why are they always, not always, but usually going to be Fox's national game on a Sunday? There's a reason for mm-hmm. that. And some of you, they're a relevant franchise. They're usually pretty good, but it's also more people watch that franchise than anybody else. Same with the Steelers, now the Chiefs. That's absolutely right. Got a call from Jim in Fayetteville on the McLarty Daniel hotline. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling. What's going on?
I'm looking forward to the WNBA this year. I'm going to be watching some of that.
Well, how much women's basketball have you watched before Caitlin Clark is going? I'm assuming you watched the college, the women's Final Four and all of that.
Oh, I watched my girlfriend's got me into the college women's basketball. Yeah. Anytime Tennessee, South Carolina, LSU, and Fayetteville, we're there.
That's good. Yeah.
I wanted to
go ahead though, Jim. Yeah, go ahead.
By the way, I planted a pawpaw tree this morning in honor of Earth Day, and we made that the Matt Jones pawpaw tree.
Congratulations,
just so
Matt.
You know.
It's a birthday present for you
and the Earth. Happy Earth Day as well.
This is the day the Earth was born. That's right.
Serious question. It's probably not a very smart question, but I'm just wondering: do they test college baseball players like the majors for PEDs?
I actually don't. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. I'm assuming so. I really am assuming so, but I don't know the answer to that.
And how about the bats? Are they checked?
Oh, the bats are always checked. Those are tested before every series. You got to have a sticker to show that you passed the bat test. You know, as far as whether there's any flat parts on the bat, the size of the barrel, and all of that. Yeah, they test the bats. They've been doing that a long time. As far as steroids, I don't know, but I'm assuming so because, everybody's tested.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at all these runs that Texas A&M was putting up. Are they that good?
At this point, I don't think they're flukes. I don't think they're flukes this late in a baseball season. Yes, I think A&M is as good as their record shows.
Okay, I'll let my conspiracy theory there. But anyway.
What is your I want to hear this. What is your theory?
No, I'm just, if something's going on down in College Station with all these runs being scored.
Oh, I see where you were going there. So all these questions kind of coalesce around the same idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to buy into that. I think that they're probably just drinking milk and doing protein shakes.
Whatever you say, Phil.
A lot of steak.
I appreciate it, man.
A lot of steak, too. As much protein as possible. Am I right about that?
They got a nice chow hall, man. They got a lot of money in A&M. I bet it's first class everywhere they go.
I'm sure it is. They are putting up the kind of numbers that...
Are they like Florida last year when it comes to hitting, or are they better? Because Florida, you said last year, was the best hitting team in the SEC, so A&M's the best hitting team this year?
They're one. Tennessee is kind of at a point where it's tough to get it past them. They have a really frightening lineup and already 111 home runs. Yeah. A&M isn't quite that powerful, but they work the count. They scare pitchers out of the strike zone. They got power both sides of the plate. They're a really complete team, A&M is. And that's who Arkansas finishes the regular season with. You know, these next 4 weeks, they're not going to decide the way the season goes. You know, I've talked with Bub about this, and he didn't really want to get into it too much because he's superstitious, because he's an athlete still. But what you're trying to do, it's the same idea as we bring up in the college basketball season. You're just trying to get the best seed you can going into the tournament. Yeah, you're playing the team that's in front of you, scouting the team that's in front of you, play the schedule, and you're trying to win a division, and you're trying to win a regular season title, and just win games. But you're really trying to get, in the grand scheme of it, if your season, you know, if you feel how you feel based upon what you did in March in basketball, it's the same with baseball in June. You're just trying to make sure that you're playing as many games at home that you possibly can, which means you have to be a top eight national seed. If you want to be a top eight national seed in the Southeastern Conference, you need to win at least 18 league games. You win 18 in this league, I think especially this year, you're probably going to be top eight. You win a division, there's no doubt you're a top eight. Like 2 years ago, when the Razorbacks led the West Division going into the final weekend and lost 2 out of 3 to Alabama, ended up finishing in second place. One more win, I'm telling you, they'd have been a top eight. Or not a top eight, they would have at least played at home in the regional. With a top 16. Didn't happen, weren't a top eight. I think they need 6 more wins in the regular season against SEC teams. That's out of 12 played. I'm not telling you you want to be a 500 team. It's not the mindset at all. That's not the way they're looking at it. I don't think anybody in the dugout, I don't think any of the coaches are like, how many games do we need to win to be top eight? I'm looking at it that way. 6 more. 6 more means you win 20 and lose 10. That's what they did last year. Or, no, it wasn't last year. It was a couple years ago. Win 20, lose 10, you're in a position where you play at home. And at home, they're 27-1. Don't worry about what happens in Omaha. This team, actually, they're built for that ballpark. That ballpark, Omaha, is huge. This is not a team that relies on the home run very much. This is a team that will need, in that ballpark, in the College World Series, you can win a game with 3 or 4 runs. You know, and Carolina's park kind of played like that this last weekend. It played like a pitcher's park, even though it's got hitter's park distances. This you got to get to Omaha for that to matter. But this is a team that is kind of built to win in a place like the Chuck. Jason in Frankfurt is next on the McLarty Daniel Hotline. Hi, Jason. What's up?
Hey, I'm doing okay. You have observed as much Razorback baseball in the last several years than anyone. Let me ask you this, because you know how Dave Van Horn operates most of the time. At any point, do you ever foresee anyone else getting the start in right field other than Kendall Diggs? Or is he just so loyal and the defense is so valuable out there that he just kind of... He's an anchor out there.
No, Diggs is the one guy that you know will be the starting outfielder every game. And look, he had a couple of doubles in the last ball game. I know Dave said he thought he swung the bat really well Friday and Saturday. The numbers might not necessarily show it, but he saw better at-bats, a better swing, and just the fact that his last 2 at-bats ended up with doubles and hit the ball hard twice. Diggs is the hitter more than anybody in this lineup. He was the big RBI man last year. If he does even a little more of an uptick from what he's been doing, things change offensively for this team. With men on base and Diggs at bat, if he's feeling healthy and feeling good about things, which I think he might now, then things can change a little bit because he can be a really dynamic run producer and there shouldn't be anybody else in right field. And I don't know if – look, I think Dave's done everything he possibly can do to test on this whole – outfield thing. I mean, look at the last week. Peyton Holt started in right field, left field, and center field. And Ross Lovich started in right field and left field. And Will Edmondson started in right field and left field. And Ty Wilsmeyer started in center field and then was on the bench and came in to play center field in the last couple of innings in a couple of games. They've tried everything out there. Everything. Kendall Diggs is the one guy that I don't think will come out of the lineup as far as the outfield is concerned.
Fair enough. I just see all the strikeouts, and I'm sure Dave is as frustrated or more frustrated than me. But, yeah, I wish him the best. I'm not looking to see, you know, I just am curious on what you observe. So
I think the strikeouts, yeah. Jason, had I think they had a lot more to do with shoulder pain that he wasn't telling anybody about. Like Bubba and I would look at each other. It's like, you know what? He just swung and missed at a pitch that he crushed last year. Something's not quite right. It's not a mental thing. It was a physical thing. And the anti-inflammatories, the rest last week, pretty big. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Diggs doesn't play tomorrow at Dickie Stevens just to keep that shoulder rested for the games this weekend. So, but I hope he's back to hitting those pitches that he was missing earlier because they were pitches he crushed in 2023.
They're going to need his bat in Kentucky, so I'm looking forward to that Derby weekend. You take care, okay?
All right, thanks, Jason. Hope to see you in Kentucky. That's right. Jason said he would be there when the Razorbacks do play there.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Check out the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast at hitthatline.com.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.